A few years ago, a colleague was complaining about the mess left in her house after she'd taken down her Christmas decorations and how it was ages until the council would come to collect her now very sorry and sad tree for recycling. It was the 27th of December, and for my colleague, Christmas was over. It was time to look towards New Year. The festivities were done. Gifts had been exchanged. The dinner had been eaten and digested, and it was time to go on with the normality of life, albeit a little less glittery and sparkly than the previous month had been. In the course of our conversation, I commented that I'd probably not be taking my tree down until the 5th or 6th of January, and when asked why, I found myself explaining Twelfth Night and Epiphany. Her knowledge of the Christian traditions of Christmas were limited to what she'd encountered in the nativities of her childhood and school, but encountering someone with a different perspective gave the opportunity to learn and explore something unfamiliar. Her interest and questions about this were clear and insightful. Since we have the kings in the nativities, surely the kings had seen Jesus as a baby. Where had the kings come from? Why do the Christmas card picture show them in a stable? Were there three kings? How did the star fly across the sky? How do we know about these wise men? Did all Christians really believe this story? This week, we hear the story of the wise men, familiar faces at the nativity scenes. But don't they jar a bit with the poverty of a stable and shepherds? They are so very different to the other characters in the story, often depicted in luxurious clothes, obviously wealthy, giving gifts inappropriate for an infant. Of course, Matthew alone has them as part of his account of Jesus' birth, but they are included in the pageantry of Christmas, even though they really belong later in the story. Christianity has enjoyed its journey with the wise men, often depicted as oriental kings, mysterious astronomers or astrologers. They are travellers from afar. Over the centuries, their names and number have changed from the two wise men originally depicted in 2nd century Italian art. This grew to give us Caspar, Balthazar and Melchior, and in the Turkish or Ethiopian traditions, there are as many as 12 kings. A few years ago now, the then Archbishop of Canterbury, Rowan Williams, caused a great deal of upset at Christmas time when he reportedly dismissed the story of the three wise men as legend. Speaking in a BBC radio interview, he is quoted as saying, "Matthew's gospel doesn't tell us there were three of them, doesn't tell us they were kings, doesn't tell us where they came from. It says they are astrologers, wise men, from somewhere outside the Roman Empire. That's all we're really told." Alongside this, he also called into question a literal approach to certain other aspects of the traditional Christmas story. The press at the time, not to mention many biblical literalists, had a field day about what Rowan Williams didn't believe. What was frequently overlooked at the time, however, was his comment that the story of the wise men works quite well as legend. For Williams, it is the meaning of this story that matters, not its historical accuracy or factuality, but instead how these stories relate to the faith journey, the spiritual exploration of our ancestors, and how it relates to our own faith experience. Williams, as many others, find myth or legend as the poetry of truth, a place where story tells the profound. The wise men in Matthew's Gospel are generally understood to be astrologers. They could predict the future, a practice no longer considered by us modernists to be scientific. But in Matthew's time, they would have been the cutting edge of scientific thought. They were the intellectuals of the ancient world, the ones who looked to the sky and questioned how the world and universe functioned. And Matthew gives these forerunners of science a role in explaining and exploring faith. Drawing on the rich Jewish heritage and texts of his culture, Matthew crafts a story showing and explaining to his readers and hearers how they could see Jesus as fulfillment of the ancient scriptures through creating parallels with bygone visiting rulers to Jewish monarchs. Visitors who brought gifts and bowed down in front of influential rulers. For Matthew, living in the time since the death of Jesus, this should not be the ones with imperial political power, but instead the humble, poor, ignorant and unrepresented. He creates a story of powerful and influential great thinkers who visit Jesus and leave changed. The wise men come by a route that is not straight. They are waylaid by the powerful and domineering Herod, a significant draw upon their energies and time, taking them away from their goal. But what they lack in discernment, they make up for in persistence. When finally at their destination, they bring their questions and their gifts to the infant, and at least one question is answered. They find the child they sought. But the meeting of the Christ child is not the end of their journey. Matthew's storytelling skills cannot leave it there. There must be more. In his poem, The Journey of the Magi, T.S. Eliot suggests they left with more questions than they arrived with. Were we led all that way for birth or death? They ask. We returned to our places, these kingdoms, but no longer at ease here in the old dispensation. T.S. Eliot and Matthew both see in the journey of the wise men a spiritual awakening, a metaphor for the individual's journey towards their own spiritual renewal. The wise men returned to their land of origin by a different way, changed forever by their encounter with the divine. In Matthew's Wise Men, can we see a personal account, a parallel for our own spiritual journey, our individual path of questioning, of receiving answers that at times jar with us, the activities and patterns that cost us time on our journey, distract us and take us away from God? And in that ancient legend of journey, failure, readjustment, continuation, there is the element of renewed persistence and a recognition that meeting the divine with a seeking nature is part of the pattern of our humanity. Even though some spiritual fulfillment comes during the journey, recalibration is needed. We encounter something which makes us go in a different direction. Matthew's example of the wise men is exactly that, an awakening that they needed to go a different path. For the wise men in Matthew's story did not leave their intelligence and experience and wisdom at the door of the stable. They took it to God and laid themselves open to an experience with the eternal. They brought themselves, their journey, hardships, challenges and distractions before God. After their encounter with the divine, they were changed. There was no returning to the old ways. Matthew's legend of the wise men is of not only a tale of a journey for all seekers and questioners. Rather, it is the affirmation that on our journey of faith we are changed. We cannot return to who we were before we met God. We may wish to unknow or unexperience the trials and hardships of life which shape our understanding, but each encounter with God changes us. We cannot return to our old route. We must go by a different way from that point on. Amen.